Well, it's been an astonishing and very unsettling year. First 12 months ago, there was Bataclan. On one evening, 130 people were killed in Paris, a capital city not much further away from us here than London, and over 350 people injured. It's been a year when Vladimir Putin has sent Russian planes and warships to the Middle East, bombed hospitals and schools, civilians as well as rebels in Syria, and tipped the balance of power in favor of the Syrian president Bashar Assad. In June came Brexit, plunging this country into a very uncertain future, where there will be some gains, but sterling has plummeted, growth forecasts have been cut back, and frankly, no one knows economically what the future will bring. And more recently, the election of Donald Trump as president of the most powerful nation on earth. To most Europeans, unbelievable that the Republican Party would even choose him as their candidate. And just stupefying for us and most of the American media that he could be elected by a majority of US states. So we live in unsettled, disturbing, fear-inducing days, and we begin to ask, what next? Could the National Front win next year's presidential election in France? Or closer to home, will inflation rise substantially and I and my family be a lot worse off? Will my job be safe? Will my benefits be cut yet again? And how are people responding? Well, have you noticed that people are turning to mediums and spiritists? When Isaiah wrote these words, Judah was going through a difficult time, as it happens because they were being attacked by Syria. Now look what Isaiah says to them in chapter 8, verse 19. When someone tells you in these disturbed times to consult mediums and spiritists who whisper and mutter, should not a people inquire of their God? Why consult the dead on behalf of the living? Last week, Catherine and I went to view a possible house to buy. And on the bedside of the table of the owner was just one book, How to Hear Your Angels, by an author described on the cover as Queen of Angel Therapy. From there, on the same day, I went on to a not yet Christian friend, and on top of a pile of papers was the magazine Soul and Spirit. This is a typical issue. It calls itself your spiritual life coach. And in this particular issue were offered the ultimate A to Z of crystals, your angel scopes revealed, discover your celestial message. We're also given April stars, psychic answers, dreams decoded, how to harness the power of Feng Shui, and best of all, which nature goddess are you? Find out with our quiz. That's one for you, Mark. And it would be funny if it wasn't so deeply troubling. It's not just that it's utter nonsense, it's worse than that. It doesn't, says the Bible, bring any light. Look at verse 20. Consult God's instruction and the testimony of warning. If anyone does not speak according to this word, they have no light of dawn. No light no understanding from a magazine like Soul and Spirit, instead spiritual hunger that is not in any way satisfied, and darkness. Look now at verses 21 and 22. Distressed and hungry, they will roam through the land. When they are famished, they will become enraged, and looking upwards will curse their king and their God. Then they will look towards the earth and see only distress and darkness and fearful gloom, and they will be thrust into utter darkness. And that would be a bleak picture of Judah then and of Britain today, except that light comes. Look now at the famous words of chapter 9, verse 2. The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned. And that light comes with the birth of Jesus. Look on to verse 6. For, here's the reason for the light. To us a child is born. To us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. As the title of this talk says, Christmas changes everything. So let's look at what this passage tells us about Jesus, whose birth at Bethlehem we are soon to celebrate. Who is he? First, we're told that in the face of our confusion, Jesus is the Wonderful Counselor. Let me read verse 6 again. To us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor. This means that the teaching of Jesus, his promises, his warnings, his demands, what he forbids, his words of encouragement, are all wonderfully relevant to our life and issues, and they are true. There are many areas in which I need help, and I go to the best qualified person I can find. I've never bought a house in the UK before, so I've been taking advice from people who know about the process you need to get through. I happen to have a number of ailments at the moment, so I've been going to the doctor. And you might go to an expert for his or her wise advice on anything from the plumbing in your home to your depression, from your right to benefits to the difficulty you're having with a teenage child or a work colleague. And the expert to turn to on all the largest questions in life is Jesus. Because he, this passage, this Christmas passage reminds us, came to this earth to be our Wonderful Counselor. It's he and he alone who can give answers to the questions, some of which Phil mentioned in his prayers, like, how can I find God? How can I know God's forgiveness? How can I face the prospect of dying? How can I be sure where I'll go to after death? How can I save my marriage? What am I to do with these deep longings for a life partner? How can I cope with the disappointments I face? How can my life have real purpose? On all these questions, and on many more, Jesus has clear answers. They aren't always what we want to hear, but they are always true and in our long-term best interests. and in fact, wonderful. His teaching is unsurpassed, and therefore we must listen to him. Look almost at the top of the page, at chapter 8, verse 16. Isaiah says, "Bind up this testimony of warning, and seal up God's instruction among my disciples." And then again a few verses later on, "Don't turn to the soul and spirit people. Instead," look at verse 20, "consult God's instruction and the testimony of warning." That's what Jesus brings, instruction from God. And warning about how dangerous it is for us to drift away from God. The child who came at Bethlehem proved to be a wonderful counselor. Second, and astonishingly, he was and is the mighty God. Look back at verse 6. "He will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God." Jesus, who came to earth and was born in Bethlehem, was not just a remarkable human being. He was and is God, the mighty God, who came to earth and is still here, unseen among us. And many of us need that might of Jesus because we feel helpless. Helpless because of the debts we have, which constantly eat away at us. Or because we're in a job we feel like we don't enjoy at all, but we just can't get out of. Or because of a personal relationship that has turned sour. Or because we suffer from an illness which never seems to get better. We feel trapped. Just as Judah at this time, where Isaiah was preaching, felt trapped. Attacked not just by Syria, but by its northern neighbor, the kingdom of Israel, as well. But that was where the mighty God was going to step in. Look at verses 4 and 5. Verses which speak directly to God. Verse 4. "For as in the day of Midian's defeat, you, God, have shattered the yoke that burdens them," that is, the people of Judah, "the bar across their shoulders, the rod of their oppressor. Every warrior's boot you'd used in battle and every garment rolled in blood will be destined for burning, will be fuel for the fire." In other words, the battles will be over and peace will come. And it will all be the work of God, the mighty God, the one who would later come to this earth as Jesus. Now this promise will only be completely fulfilled at the end of time, when Jesus, the mighty God, comes again. But meanwhile, he will give us some victories, as he gave Judah some. And so because his power is limitless, we must rejoice in him. Look at verse 3. "You have enlarged the nation and increased their joy. They rejoice before you as people rejoice at the harvest, as warriors rejoice when dividing the plunder." As we believe that Jesus is the mighty God and rejoice in him, so many of our seemingly insuperable problems will get sorted out by him. The weight of debt will come off our shoulders. That difficult, aggressive relationship will become more manageable and calm. The battles we faced at work will be resolved. And while we wait to be free from these conflicts, or even if we never are while on this earth free from them. Jesus, the mighty God, will be with us, sustaining us, encouraging us, giving us, if not outward, then certainly inward, peace. Catherine and I have seen this very clearly over the last fortnight, with a Christian woman who, out of the blue, has been told that she has only days to live, and is facing her death with utter composure and acceptance, which is very striking to anyone who visits her, and especially to her family, who don't yet all share her faith. And then this child, this boy born in Bethlehem, is also the everlasting Father. Once more, verse 6. He will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father. This is a part of Rembrandt's famous picture, The Prodigal Son. The young man snuggling his head up against his father is the prodigal son, is us, as we have sinned and gone away from God. And the hands are those of the father, who've never stopped loving his wayward son and welcomes him home. And the fact is that every one of us here has insecurities. You may put a brave face on it, but I have, and you have as well. Some of us have a rather strained relationship with our human father, or now have very little contact with him. Some of us are not sure whether our boyfriend or girlfriend really cares for us, or whether our marriage partner really loves us anymore. Some of us feel that we're just a way of making money or ensuring the organization runs smoothly to our bosses at work, no more than that. And a few of us have sometimes thought, if I died, I wonder whether anyone would mind that much. But with Jesus, we have a relationship where we can be absolutely confident of his love. Because he and God are totally one, he is called here not just our brother, but our everlasting father. Think of the best father you have ever experienced for yourself or seen in other families, and then add much more genuine love, and you have some idea of Jesus' fatherly love for you. What's more, his love will never cease. My dad has died, and though I would love to be with him, I can't be anymore. But Jesus is our everlasting Father, always there, caring in a way that never ends. And so we must trust him. This is one of the great themes of the book of Isaiah. And in our passage, it comes at chapter 8, verse 17. Very typical, this, of Isaiah's preaching. I will wait for the Lord, who is hiding his face from the descendants of Jacob. I will put my trust in him. Yes, Jesus, our Father, may hide his face from us for a time. He may not answer our prayers immediately, just as a human father sometimes has to say no to his children. And the children don't always understand why. Yes, we have to wait for the Lord, as this verse puts it, to wait until he knows the time is right to act. But we will never be let down if we go on trusting in him. He is faithful. He is our everlasting Father. And then fourth, he was and is the Prince of Peace. Let me read once more the whole of verse 6. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. We've heard already from Isaiah about the peace he brings when our battles are stilled. But in the next verse, what is emphasized is that Jesus is the Prince. Look at how the passage continues in verse 7. Of the greatness of his government and peace, there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing it and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on and forever. The zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this. And that is exactly what has happened. Jesus was born now just over 2,000 years ago. When he died, he had only a few score followers. But since then, his kingdom, his government, has gone on and on growing. In 2016, there are more Christians alive today than in all the Christians who lived in the years up to 1900 put together. It's true Christianity is sadly declining in Europe and North America, in Australia and New Zealand, but in almost every other country in the world it is growing, including in the countries that are far and away the largest, in India and in China. And because he is the Prince not only of Israel but of the whole world, we must submit to him. As verse 6 puts it, the government must be upon his shoulder. If there are areas of our life we want to keep away from him so that the government is not upon his shoulders in those spheres, in the friendships we make, what we do in our leisure time, our sexual lives or our sexual fantasies, our working life or career, our use of money, then there will always be conflicts for us. Because it's never comfortable as a Christian to try to have a foot in both camps. But as soon as we submit to him, that inner turmoil ceases. And he gives us his peace. That's why he's called the Prince of Peace. That's why verse 7 begins, of the greatness of his government and peace, there will be no end. You see, the two things go together. If he's the governor of our lives, there'll be peace. If we want to remain the governor, we'll soon forfeit the peace or never find it. So what will 2017 bring? After Bataclan and Putin and Brexit and Trump, what will happen in the next 12 months and in the years beyond? One thing which this year has done is shown us far more than we realized that the future is unpredictable. That things may turn out not at all as we envisaged. And that can leave us feeling unsettled, a bit exposed and insecure. But for the Christian, the question is wrongly put. It's not what lies in the future, but who lies in the future. And the answer is Jesus. Jesus, the child who was born at Bethlehem, who came to this earth on a mission, Jesus who rose again, who's alive, who's already Lord, and who one day will be universally and without any opposition reigning. Then in that great future, in which all genuine Christians will participate, we will know the truth of verse 7, of the greatness of his government and of peace, there will be no end. That's what the future holds. A time when, as verse 7 goes on, he will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on and forever. And that whole process all began, at least as far as our apprehension of it is concerned, at the first Christmas. Christmas changes everything. So that what excites us at this time is not Black Friday or primary school Christmas plays or clever adverts from John Lewis or Amazon or even family reunions round a groaning dinner table. It is simply and magnificently this. To us, a child is born. To us, a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulder. And he will be called, he is called, Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Let us pray. Perhaps in the silence you'll take just one of those names of Jesus, the one that is most precious to you or that has been illuminated somehow for you during this look at Isaiah chapter 9, and just speak in praise back to Jesus for who he is. Lord Jesus, you are far greater than any praise that we have given. But thank you that you accept our praise. Amen.